inherited from my mother a collection of farm diaries and farm account books that she had stored for 50 years with no respect since her father died in 1960. My interest to search into this collection was triggered in 2018, only 2 years ago, by visits to our Ceredigion archive at Aberystwyth, where Cardigan's data prior to the First World War are available. Also, my membership of Welsh Women's Archive and the British Agricultural History Society. My grandfather's Richard Lewis Jones's clear records coincide with the inter-World War years. His foresight to put into practice Westminster's policy to educate farmers to improve crops and plough the land for more food. Richard Lewis's success on three separate levels, his immediate community, his county and Wales. From this point, I will refer. Bill was a qualified chartered surveyor and looking for a first employment. And this employment came as a field officer under the Finance Act. The Finance Act was set up by the government and led by David Lloyd George. He was Chancellor of the at the time. The proposed tax would be on land, and although this never came to place, it was called the Domesday Survey. To leave north of Aberystwyth to go to his first employment, R.L. buys his Triumph motorbike. These details of this motorbike we can get from our archive in Aberystwyth, and the Triumph motorbike is registered in 1912, and the engine is 3.5 horsepower and the weight is 160 pounds. Not that it means a lot to me, but the number plate means more, I think. EJ109. Now, where does he go to work on the assessments of every farm in the parish of Llandygwydd? The parish of Llandygwydd is the very south of the county. It's near Newcastle Emlyn, but the parish is borders between Pembrokeshire, Cardiganshire and Carmarthenshire. RL took lodgings at the village of Cwmcoy, and that's in the Teifi Valley between Newcastle Emlyn and Kenneth. Now, I'm interested in what RL did in the parish of Llandygwydd, what farms he visited, and I stay with one farm that has a code number of 191. Now, the details I find in the Finance Act of this farm relates to the landlord as Lloyd Williams. The extent of the farm is 168 acres, and the value he puts on the 240 acres is 5,850. The woodland measures 730. And these details I got from the archive in Aberystwyth. Let me look at the map of the farm. The farm is among the maps that were drawn up in 1906, 1907, and in 1910 they were used for the Finance Act. Here we see the layout of the farm, that the river of the River Teifi runs along the meadows, so there's meadows along the River Teifi, the woodland in the middle, and the extent of the farm otherwise. The survey map has a certain number, it's 106, 107, and there are some details in the of the parish maps. On the census of 1911, I wanted to know who lived at Penwenaf Farm at that time. The census of 1911 gives me Mary Ann Edwards, head of the farm, and she's a widow. She has a daughter, Harriet Edwards, who is single. So in the between those two censuses, David Edwards had passed away and Mary Ann Edwards became head of the farm and Harriet leaves Penwenat with her mother for a marriage to RL. The marriage takes place in August 29th, 1914. At this August, this First World War is at its height and the German advance on the Western Front. Britain has declared war on Germany and the invasion of the neutral Belgium. RL marries Harriet, who is 26 years old, at Cwmcoy Chapel, and his brother is a witness and a cousin, as I know. The marriage certificate tells me that RL describes himself as a land valuer, and they were married by the minister, David Evans. Now, Mary Ann, the mother-in-law of RL, is still in the picture in 1916. She transfers her tenancy of Penwenat Farm jointly to Harriet, her daughter, and RL, her son-in-law. And we have a document that shows the price of this document. The document in 1915 costs £22.11. And the landlord then is a Lloyd Williams of Glenaravon, and the Glenaravon estate is near the halt on the Vale of Idle railway to Devil's Bridge. That's where the Lloyd Williams family. He's the Lieutenant Lloyd Williams. RL and Harriet set about the farm, but it's mainly RL that does the work. And what he looks at every field on the farm, and he calculates what rent that he will pay to his landlord. And the field names I have a collection of, and we have records of. And the rent arrived at for 222 acres is £222. So it's always paid in half yearly sums. Now, we know the River Tyvee runs through the land, and the water for field troughs and the farmyard buildings from the Tyvee is coming into place in 1931. And the Lister is the maker of the pumps used. The Lister representative called me the water pump on Wednesday. They fixed the water pipe as far as the farmyard and sheds, running water in cowshed and water taps, and made concrete water troughs. Now we've seen how he measures up the value of his land. Now he starts to feed every field. So as a tenant, he arranges that each field has tons and tons of slag. Now, it wasn't enough to give slag to every, but he wants to measure what percentage of slag and what price is the slag. The slag is bought at the Co-op in Newcastle Emlyn, and basic slag is a byproduct from the steel furnaces and rich in lime and used as fertilizers. Slag sweetens the grass to feed the soil acidity and reduce acidity. It's good for grazing. The slag was at 42% and or 24%, and these varied in price, of course. The Co-op in Newcastle Emlyn, again, it's just above the bridge in Newcastle Emlyn, the River Tyvee, and it was in place. So what did the farm buy at the Co-op? So let's look at the sales of butter at the time. In 1917, the sale of butter is at 1.08 a pound. The price of one egg is tuppence, but in December, the price of eggs went up to 3.5. And the seed potatoes of the land was £3. Now, in this red sales account, I come across that the motorcycle Triumph that he started his career with in Southwark County was sold for £30. The half year rent, as I've mentioned, is £111. The rates he pays for Llandigwith Community or the is £7.19.04, and 8 tons of slag is £19.08. So the co-op, as I mentioned in Newcastle Union, for the year, the bill was £115.17.05. Besides feeding the land and paying the bills, now RL sets about to improve a range of farm buildings. It takes 2 years to do this work, and the final cost to implement the changes that he had in place was £199.12.07. And the labour cost is costs are also included in this book. These sheds, the layout is not what you'd see on a farm today, and they're labour intensive, where everything has to come in and out the narrow doors, and that's how you bring the muck out of the muck heaps. So they range of farm building stock. Among the daggers I have, they are in various shapes and sizes, and this is the single lightweight of them all. And this is a 1919 desk diary. It's called a Penny's Diary. And what I found interesting within the 1919 diary was the sale of rabbits. The sale of rabbits came to 512 rabbits at 8 pence each. So they received 17 shillings, 1 shilling and 4 pence. And in the diary, in this diary of nine as well, the sale of milk, 293 gallons for £32.19.3. Now in January the 5th of 1919, he buys his first tractor. It's a Fordson tractor, and the price he paid for it is £252. The when he collects the tractor in February that year, he says I fetched the Fordson tractor and plough and paid £267 to a J.D. Lloyd. So the plough did cost 15 shillings. But on the whole, I think it was early for the transition, the staff, and it was easier to look after the horses than the first tractor they had on that farm. Let's look at the wages. So I'm looking at the diary of 1919 still, and the practice of going to the fair, you go to from Penwenna to be to Cardigan or for Newcastle Emily. And at this fair in Cardigan, he engages a farm worker for Lynn, he's called Lynn, for £22.10. But it is difficult to value the wages because I wouldn't know whether they boarded in the farm or received food and milk to go along with their wages. He would record the weather, of course, that was part of the farm. Another enterprise at Penwenard Farm was the chickens. And these eggs, I'm looking now at 1929, and the eggs he put down then were of Rhode Island Red and Light Sussex. They would mark, I'm sure it was the girls or women who did this work. And the eggs were marked and turned. The hens at that price would be 1 and 6 each. The interesting entry was that in Aberystwyth, he sold to Aberystwyth, he sent away cockerels. And the cockerels would expect to collect 1 shilling 2 pence a pound. But the car to send them that they used for transport properties with 2 shillings and 7 pence. The chick, a baby chick then, once it hatched, would be sold for 4 pence. And in May of 1929, the sale of eggs, 360 eggs, came to £1.15. Now, as I've probably not underlined enough, of the family RL was born into, they all went into agriculture or went to courses at Aberystwyth University or short courses. Now, two of his brothers were engaged at the plant breeding station at Cogerthan and under the leadership of George Stapleton. And the research at Cogerthan was now 100 years old. It was celebrated the centenary last year. So what the farm practice used by the Cogerthan was to come out to various farms to hold trials. And Penwenar was one of the farms where trials were held. So the trials held at Penwenar were to, that I have a record of, was to weigh sheep. So I record sheep regularly. So what I've looked at in these records was how lambs born the same day and how they gained weight within a period of a few months. So from February to July I looked at. And what weight gains, looking at females and male, and what the practice found out of research proved that the weight gain on both female and male were greater in crossbreds and purebreds. And the PBS at Cogerthan was in contact with Penwenar for all the years. Now, with the PBS was wintering of sheep, 110 sheep, but the trials were 44 pounds. And in that was in 1932, and in 1939 there's records of labour on the sheep and rent for the sheep. Then in 1931, 80 lambs at 120 pounds. So it was a practice that was ongoing. And I even remember myself that did come to the farm. As well as looking at the sheep in relation to the best plant produce at Aberystwyth, we have a record of how he grew spring barley, winter oats, and spring oats. So winter oats and spring oats. And the arrangement was that the plant breeding station or the university in Aberystwyth forward them on the rail down to Newcastle Emlyn to go to the farm, and that was in 1931. And they come in so many bushels, and the head of research then at Aberystwyth would be an E.T. Jones, and there were Coxford's plots for grass, the rent that Aberystwyth paid for Coxford plots was in 1932 at £4.10. But the friendship between George Stapleton, Sir George Stapleton and R.L. remained true, and that's how the plots came about. I would say that if I lived at the Penwenar farm earlier, and because I was born later, the thrashing machine was still there, but let's look at an earlier thrashing day. The thrashing, that was a community event where all the farmers in the locality came in to help the farm at Penwenar. The thrashing machine would run powered from the coal, and the thrashing day, the farmers who came along were from the neighbourhood, and the names of the farm may relate to it's Finandurgi, Vronglid, Ripping Clwyd and Trwmpedw. But if two farmers came from the immediate farm, two would go back to when they had their thrashing day. And on the thrashing day, women were in the female role of bringing food out. They were not part of the thrashing team. But another aspect of community that happened in the diary is that at the back of the 1919 diary we saw earlier, is the practice that RL would offer the service of a field to grow potatoes. So this is the potato register. The 15 participants came and looked after their potatoes on the farm. So it was two or five rows. In all, there were 138 rows for potatoes. But RL wouldn't be happy just to take one breed of potatoes, one style. So in those community, the potatoes were King Edward, and I've heard of Majestic, and a Great Scott, and Ali. The ladies from the village of Cwm Coed, the register would show me, were in charge of the planting, hoeing, and harvesting. And these ladies would walk to the farm to look after the activity of looking after the potatoes. But the farmyard many were important to them all. RL was the first shorthorn breeder in South Wales to keep such records. And we know that the South Wales Milk Committee didn't come in place until 1921. Now, from his register of milk records, and he looked at the compared how much milk, quantity of milk was required to produce a pound of butter. And this was the calculation he looked at. And what is in 1917, he does this exercise in January and August, and how much milk was required to make a pound of butter, and it varies. So this must be related to the quality of the grass in peak at the time. And he did look at 1917, that it required 27 pounds of milk to make a pound of butter in January, and yet in August it would require 29 pounds of milk to produce a pound of butter. And similarly in the following year of 1918, the requirement varied from April to May. Another example of how valuable this record is, and how I'm sure it can't happen, is that in the exercise book he has in 1916, he gives the annual herd average. And I wanted to find out if that annual herd average went up in his records from 1916 to 1920. And indeed it does. From 1916 to 17, the annual herd average is 5,512. And yet in a few years later, it goes up to 6,789. And I'm told even today that the records of average dairy herd of shorthorns is not more than double that. Butter sales are a shilling and fourpence. So the sale of liquid milk RL was engaged in, and he saw that there was a possibility even in near Newcastle Emlyn, and there was because of the railway coming in Newcastle Emlyn, if he could have set up a milk factory. And the milk factory opened in 1920. And the first intake is that 155 gallons of milk on the first day. And I know that this, from his records, that milk came in from Cardigan, and that was 112. And then from Newcastle itself, 43 gallons. And the entry I found in the 1921 diary is that it was showery. He always recalled it, the weather on such a day. And the pony ran away on the street at Newcastle Emlyn and spilled all the milk. His milk records are long and carefully drawn up, but that's something perhaps you'd ask again of. The Milk Marketing Board itself wasn't set up until 1934. The milk factory in Newcastle Emlyn set up in 1920 didn't always fall on good times. Newcastle Emlyn is the milk factory. The factory was set up on the old site of the workhouse, and the workhouse is at the rail station side of Newcastle Emlyn, and it was set up in, it had found some difficulties at some points, and the convenience of the milk factory along the railway station enhanced the possibilities of shifting milk towards South Wales. And the work that committee engaged RL would do on the milk and the milk sales, and to his farmhouse in Penwenallt, he would do the accounts for the year. And his farm ledgers show me that he made a profit most years, and the profit at the farm of Penwenallt varied from £254, £287, and these profit and loss years between 1924 and 1931. Now, as I've touched on the milk sales before, what does happen in the 1920s is that the milk prices drops. In 1921, 1 shilling 3 pence for the milk. Yet in 1922, it drops to 6 pence. So these are difficult times for such members or farmers or pioneers that put the milk factory into place. So it wasn't an easy ride for them. And as well, this drop in livestock valuation he shows on his farm records, the value of the cattle drop as well. Although the stock goes up, the cattle value in that difficult years shows as well. And as I say, he was one for ruler and pencil and calculations. And I do remember seeing his headed notepaper, and he would the first telephone bill that I saw on his in his account books, that the first telephone bills were for 1 shilling 13 and 1 pound 13 shillings and 4 pence. That's in May 1932. The wireless license at that time was 10 shillings. Now we're in the after the First World War, and we're going on to the Royal Welsh Show. Now the Royal Welsh Show didn't happen in the war years, and in 1924 the show re-engaged itself at Bridgend. And for this show, RL took some pigs, and indeed he did win some prizes, bringing up home £10 in prize money. Now, and then the prize money he did have in 1924 was first prize with a gilt and first prize with a young boar. And what's surprising is that in 1925, the Royal Welsh Show was again in South Wales. So the practice of moving north and south doesn't seem to happen. And in Carmarthen, the show was in for the 4th or 7th of August. He takes hired a lorry to take the pigs to the Royal Welsh, and the prize money, I wouldn't think, pays for the lorry. But the prize money in 1925 he has is £2. He is very highly commended for his young boar, and in that class there were 16 entries. In the young gilt class there were 19 entries. In the pairs of gilts, 12 entries. So the group competition was highly commended. But this would help improve the chance to sell his pigs as well after such a show. He sold the young boar on the sale following the show at £10.10 to Lloyd Jacquard fel un fach. The Royal Welsh becomes part of RL and the committee wise, and for 10 years he was the livestock director at this Royal Welsh show, and more than that he was invited to be on the working party of the finance committee. As a child I would travel with him to such Royal Welsh, because by then he had lost his wife Harriet, and I would be or my sister look after him in the caravan. And at those days the Royal Welsh isn't what it was today, there were only few caravans for such people. Now some of the Royal Welshes that I saw him work as a livestock director was in Aberystwyth, and it's in 1957. Now at this show the bank of the river burst and the river flooded the show field, so it wasn't a comfortable sight to be in. And the Royal Welsh at this time was looking for more membership, so the membership they believed wouldn't arrive at until they had a permanent show ground. And from that finance committee that RL was part of, along with two others, they formed the working party to look at a permanent site for the show. And in 1960, such a meeting was held to see how they were progressing. In July of that year, 1960, the meeting was held at the Royal Welsh Showground. And in that very year, arrangements were in place to buy the site they are now at Bilth Wells. The other option would have been Aberystwyth. Aberystwyth didn't come into place. So that's how, it's in 1960, RL was part of the Royal Welsh show purchase for the site. So the office in time moved from Queen's Road in Aberystwyth. What the Royal Welsh did in 1960 was look for the power to acquire power to borrow money. So once they had the power to borrow money, the working party proceeded to buy the 176 site at Bilth Wells. In 1960, sadly the same year, RL passed away. So he does need acknowledgement for his part in the Royal Welsh. Now we know the dairy milking herd is in place at Penwenaeth, and they're improving their milking ability or production records. But where does he go to look for a bull? He goes to Birmingham, and as the term we use in Birmingham, the bull ring, well, they did have bull sales there. And at this bull sale in 1918, RL buys the bull fit for 52 guineas, Red Butterfly. And this, although he improves his own herd, he improves those of his neighbours and community, because he shares this facility of the bull for to partake in service in putting others' dairy cows as well. The bull arrived home in Newcastle Emlyn, and the carriage from Birmingham to Newcastle Emlyn is £1.15. But the train journey then to Birmingham for Arad himself is £19 and £8. Now, with the improving of dairy and the improving of bulls and sires for his cows, we're looking at registering his herds being pedigree. And up until now, pedigree dairy cows were only kept by the landed gentry, like in Havod of Comestwith. I have a record of a cow being bought at Clynview, and that's north of Pembrokeshire, for 26 guineas in October of 1923. And I know there had been a sale at Havard as well. Yeah. Now in 1928, records show me that he had 10 cows in milk, 3 cows in calf, and 6 heifers. And later in the 1920s, bull sales came into place into Carmarthen, not always for pedigrees, but commercial as well. Now the name that RL chooses for his pedigree prefix for his is Wenallt. So if you think of Pen Wenallt, what it takes is part of the name of the farm to label his herd as a Wenallt dairy short horn. We have looked at his competing at the Royal Welsh Show, but what RL was equally engaged is his local show at Newcastle Emlyn. And the highest number of points he gained at that show came in sections like the recorded cow, the group of cows, the gilt, ewe lambs, the collier gelding, and the farm turnout. And these are his ability to work on the local level and the Welsh level. Now, RL has 3 children. It's Aline, Yorworth, and Lillian. So RL's youngest son, Aline, at Penwenallt, at that time they would have the herd competitions. So the herd competition meant that somebody already now we have established a milk records committee in South Wales. So another other activity was to hold a herd competition. And they would arrive at the farm and inspect the quality of the milking herd, how they looked and how they walked. So this is how the and in 1928 he had cows in milk and cows in calf. Now in 1932 he already has 2 sons at the home of the farm. But he arranges an auction. So why an auction in 1932? People would say, just say that the prices of livestock had fallen. Now, the RL had decided in 1932 to take a full-time work at Lampeter. So he leaves from Newcastle Emlyn to travels to Lampeter every day to work. Now let's stay with a farm sale for a minute. In this catalogue I have, he records the price of every animal in the sale. The proceeds at that sale is £745.17. And the bread for the sale, he records what those are as well. So they are now in 1932. What he sells are 41 Wenallt pedigree short horn entries, cows and heifers. Now he doesn't close down his sale, but his farm, but puts his boys in, his sons to become farmers there, and he then, they all live on this, he doesn't leave the farm. Yeah. Now from this catalogue shows me that from the very first cows he had in Penwenallt, as Mary Ann is, when she was there, they were Wenallt Kerry, and all her descendants, we have Wenallt Kerry the 8th, Wenallt Kerry the 19th, and Wenallt Kerry the 11th in 1932. So he stays with some lines of the. Now the top price at that auction was £31 for Wenallt Beauty. Now, RL, as I've said, leaves to work in Lampeter full time, and is the cultivation officer, and he makes inspections on farms and reports to the small holding subcommittee, so the Cardiganshire Agricultural Committee. So he presents reports continually. The inspections have valuations and salaries. Now when he goes to work in full time, his salary for the valuation officer is £20.12/6 in 1932. And the later he becomes the, in the Second World War, he becomes the cultivation officer for Cardiganshire, and later still the Cardiganshire County Land Agent. His family are important to him, and on the death of his father, the family meet up. And what they do this when they meet up this time, that each child of the 10 children look to make a record, a photograph of each of their families, so it's something to share between the extended family. My mother would make regular cuttings from newspapers, but oh dad, she never kept the date. So I wish she'd kept the dates in some of these. But there we are, we have a record of paper cuttings that my mum would keep. I do treasure the memory of knowing RL, my grandfather, as a child with as well. Diolch yn fawr i chi. He was a tenant or a